Hello and welcome to Humans of Agape. We are Agape Europe, a community of people who make Jesus known so lives are changed and Europe is transformed. We want to bring spiritual hope and help to people from all walks of life. I am your host, my name is Jochen Geck. I work in the Berlin City Hub in Germany, and I'm curious to hear about what God is doing across Europe. So this is what this podcast is about. I interview people who are on staff with Agape and ask them about what God is doing in their lives and ministries. In today's episode, we're traveling to Dublin, Ireland to speak with Chloe Hannon. She shares with us about her addiction to talk about Jesus, how she brings him up in conversations and how people react. Here she is.
Hello, Chloe.
Greetings.
How are you this fine day?
I am doing very well, although it is less of a fine day in Dublin, Ireland.
What kind of day is it?
It's grey. Grey and cold.
Chloe, you mentioned Dublin, Ireland. What is it you do in Dublin, Ireland?
Well, I live and work and play in Dublin, Ireland for the whole of my entire life so far. So I am working with Agape in the city of Dublin.
Okay, and what is it you do with Agape in the city of Dublin?
I am the National Campus Director, cue trumpets.
Wow, fancy. Yeah. What does a day or a week in the life of a National Campus Director look like?
Never two the same, is what I would say. I try to condense it down to one similar week would be hard, but majoritively, a lot of time with students, a lot of time with staff. We are a small staff team, so there are three of us. So my national campus director does not involve, for example, the use of an office ever. I'm still very much so on the ground with students daily, which I love, to be honest. So, and then sometimes use my kitchen table or a Starbucks somewhere for an office to do all the other tasks.
Okay. And for all of us who aren't on staff with Agape and are probably not familiar with all the terms, how would you define the role of a National Campus Director?
You are the team leader of the campus team on a national level. So you are, I guess, on the cutting edge of developing strategy for the entire country, for thinking through how to reach students across Ireland, and then also being sure to lead the team well and take care of those who are on the team as well. That makes
okay.
sense?
That does make sense.
Good.
So that is what you do in general. What's the Chloe approach to being a National Campus Director?
It's a little bit surreal. I'm a fan of surrealism. So the Chloe approach to being a National Campus Director is, well, one of my top strengths is strategic. So I find I am often deeply thinking about the ways in which we operate as a campus ministry and how to sharpen them in terms of how to increase our reach. And then also how to effectively continue doing what we are doing. What are the tweaks that we can make? What are the different things that we could try in both evangelism and discipleship? And then I have a high priority of being sure that the lads who are on my team have a positive life experience of being a staff member of Agape. So they are well taken care of, they are well stewarded, they are well directed and well developed. So, yeah.
Could you give a couple of examples of how you do that?
Well, Ruth McNeil will love me forever right now, but for example, having their POFO in, position focus, foci. We call them POFOs because that's a cool word. Making sure that they know realistic expectation of their daily job, because as a campus worker, the tasks never will fully ever get done in 1 week. There will always be more to do. There will always be more people to meet. So promoting a healthy work-life balance for them. We use the position focus to help focus their work. and then also to help them think outside of work, going, okay, how do I have a healthy life as well as a healthy work life? And then other things like leader development, figuring out the next appropriate challenge for them and how to draw out their skills and strengthen them. And yeah, how to support them then also in the daily grind of evangelism and discipleship, and encourage them. And yeah.
Okay. How big is your team?
There's three of us, and Jesus, and the Holy Spirit, and the Father. So yeah.
Very Trinitarian approach. Tell me about Ireland, and you said that you're the strategic mind.
Yes.
What's the strategy for student ministry in Ireland?
Well, I could send you the entire strategic document that I came up with that looks very pretty because I put really nice fonts and pictures into it. But the basic strategy for us is that we have three core convictions. Firstly, we have the conviction that we believe every Irish student has the right to respond to the gospel of Jesus before they graduate from university. Secondly, we believe that there's a huge amount of misinformation out there about Jesus. And we will uncover that all the time through surveys and solarium on campuses when we talk to students who are culturally Christians, and they will have an understanding of the things of God, and they will be like, oh yeah, I believe in God because their granny believes in God. And but yet when you ask them about Jesus, they'll be like, oh, I don't know if he existed, or oh, he was just a good guy. Or so there's a lack of real information about who Jesus was and what he did. And when you ask them what the core message of Jesus is, over 75% will say the golden rule, which is do unto others as you would have them do unto yourself. So we're quite passionate that the real message of Jesus gets some airplay in students' lives, and also on a wider platform in Irish society, that message would happen to have a platform and would get to get some airplay. Yeah. And then the last conviction we have is that the message of Jesus is that there is a God who created you and who loves you and wants to know you personally. So the strategy from there, I mean, strategy on the ground changes so regularly. I feel like you have to, you kind of fly by the seat of your pants a bit in student ministry, because you're going into a term going, okay, some ideas of things we could do. And then you see what students are around, and then you're constantly trying to transfer leadership over to them. So you want to facilitate their ideas and encourage them to step up to their ideas and encourage their visions. So, but in my experience, if you walk up to a student, new student, and you give them a blank slate, it freaks them out a bit. So we have things in place that we can, that work like a cycle. So we do the Camino in June as a project. It's a walk in the north part of Spain. It's a relatively famous pilgrimage and certainly very well known in Ireland. And so students who've just finished their state examinations and are moving from what we call secondary school, what others may call high school, we invite them to come on the project to the Camino. There is a culture here of many leaving cert students, which is our state examination, going off on big mad drinking holidays. So to offer an alternative has been utilized by many. So then we spend 10 days on the Camino with them, and it's a magical project. It's like nothing you've ever experienced for people experiencing the gospel and community and exercise. You know, it's very good for the heart. And then the next thing that we will put into our calendar, we will spend our August and September rallying in students, meeting up with them, inviting them to some social events. And we have two events in the autumn that we point students to. One of them is a retreat in Glendalough, and one which is a historical place in Wicklow, about an hour south of Dublin. Beautiful setting, an old monastic site. And the second one, which is happening this weekend, is we all trek out to the west of Ireland to a place called Lahinch and go surfing.
Oh, wow.
Yes, you might think that's a bit mad now, surfing in October in Ireland, but we do it nonetheless.
That is courageous, I would say.
Well, I don't surf, I have to confess. You couldn't pay me enough money to get in the Irish Sea in October. But I love watching the students surf.
You've been talking a lot about going away with students, hiking and retreats and things. That probably is really important in terms of discipleship and really getting into a relationship with them.
Yes.
Why is that such an important thing for you?
Ireland has always been a deeply relational culture. Nothing happens here without it being who you know. And when it comes to a topic like religion, there's a general sense of suspicion about anything institutional. And anyone who claims faith can very easily be drafted into that suspicion. So we've noticed with students that they're dying for community, and they want deep relationship, and then through that relationship, you just see Jesus starting to move in their hearts and in their lives. And at every event that we do, we will always have a talk and discussion model of. We'll have something, a topic around the gospel, and we also, all of our events are aimed at people, are not just aimed at Christians, they're aimed at people of all walks of faith and life, and very often we'll have a balance of some form between people who are seeking, people who are just kind of staunch atheists, people who are like random people like Marxists, nihilists, all these different type of people, and then some Christians as well. And so we'll have somebody, generally speaking, a staff member, sometimes a student, give a talk about something about Jesus and some aspect of the gospel, and then open it up for discussion with the students. So while they've had lots of time to effectively build relationship and have good crack, which is the Irish word for fun, not cocaine. then they also get to have deep spiritual conversations. It works kind of twofold. It means that those who are seeking and those who want to have deep discussions about the questions of life feel welcomed and normalized in an environment where there are Christians. So we would fight quite hard to remove jargon and to remove anything that is a barrier. And that anything that assumes, because I think as Christians, sometimes when we get together, we have certain markers of exclusion that are comforts for us. And then it is also a challenge for the Christian student, one, to be inviting their friends to something, two, to be having spiritual conversations with their friends, and three, when an opinion comes up that is not the prescribed ideal within a Christian culture, they have to learn how to respond in respect and to listen, and to be able to articulate their response without overriding the contrary opinion.
And how do you teach that?
Trial and error. There is an element of modeling from the front. And at every event, we will always talk about the values that we have, which are respect, questions, and crack. Again, emphasis on that not being cocaine. And we'll say that, you know, respect is, it starts when someone who has a different opinion to you, which can happen within the culture of Christianity all the time anyway. If you want to have some discussion about the serious aspects of Christianity, not everybody believes the same things. So and how to then articulate your opinion back. And I have to say, I mean, students, like, and people, we're generally good. Like, we don't set out to be super offensive to other people, and we all have a basic desire of being listened to and being understood. So when that starts happening within a room of students, it's lovely to see it, you know. It's quite encouraging to see it, and then it sort of grows.
Yeah, and I bet that's something that the students take back on campus too.
Yes. So in the past, we have done, we want the events on campus to be led and thought through by the students. So in the past, we've taken those type of discussions and done them on campus in events. Like we called, the first one we ever did, and this is going back about 7 or 8 years, was called Explore Real Life. And similar sort of model, it was a talk that has been very well scoured for any form of jargon or assumptions, and then discussion, and then that grew into a thing called Soul Food, which, you know, you put food on and students love it. And Soul Food then has taken kind of different forms in the past couple of years of what that looks like. It's happened in students' apartments, it's happened in public cafes, it's happened in restaurants on the campus, it's happened in various different shapes and forms, and with students leading it.
Now, let's talk a little bit about you, Chloe. What is something that you are passionate about in your job?
In my job? It's going to have to be summed up in Jesus. Because he is the passion of my life and has been for a very, very long time, since I was a little girl. And I very often will introduce myself, and you know, it's culturally normal to introduce yourself and say what you do as a job. And I enjoy that opportunity because not many people out there in the world will know what Agape is. So they'll be like, what is that now? And then I get a chance to edge the conversation towards Jesus. So I think having conversations about Jesus is just, it's like crack cocaine for me, you know.
So now you mean the crack that is cocaine?
Yes, I know. There's been a theme in this conversation. Cocaine. What is cocaine and what is not?
Yes. But tell me why talking about Jesus is like crack cocaine to you.
You know, I could lend my hand in many situations in life. I've seen different causes that are so worthwhile, whether it's fighting for a voice for the voiceless, whether it's advocating for people, whether it's trying to adopt social change, whether it's working on social justice on a global level. There's been numerous things that have consistently moved my heart and called out to my activist tendencies. But when I sit and think about it all, for me, everything comes back to this one basic need that we have as humans, and that is the need for Jesus and the need for our Father and the need for our Creator and the purpose that we have all been given in creation to know Him. And for me, as I said, strategic brain-wise, I'm like, well, this is the baseline. This is the key point. This is the catalytic change that has to happen. This is the one thing. If you're sitting in front of a panel of buttons and there's one button that you can press, it's the Jesus button in people's lives, you know? And I love watching dear, wonderful friends that I have who are incredibly adept and wonderful at fighting social justice causes and for advocating for people and for voices, giving voice to the voiceless. And I celebrate their gifts and their callings in their life to go do that. And it's a pleasure to be a part of that on a friendship and supporting level. And for me, my gifting and the strengths that I have in my life make the most sense when I am in a conversation about Jesus and being able to articulate clearly Him. And I come alive, like I guess it might be a little bit like I was on crack cocaine. Although I can't speak from experience on that, so.
That's good. But tell me about those gifting and strengths that come alive in a conversation about Jesus.
Well, when a conversation about Jesus, you've got to, you know, one thing that Jesus did himself when he was on this earth, and he did beautifully and modeled beautifully, is that he met every single person where they're at. I love him for that. He didn't arrive to a conversation with a set agenda of principles that he needed to communicate and and desired outcomes. You know, he really met each and every person where they're at. And in Luke, in the early chapter of Luke, I think it's Luke chapter 2, Mary is talking to the priest there, although I don't think they called themselves priest, the rabbi. And he said that one of the prophetic words over Jesus' life was that the hearts of men would be revealed. And he went on in his ministry and his life to truly reveal the heart of a conversation with people. You see it in how he approached the woman at the well, in how he approached Pharisees, in how he approached the rich young ruler. That rich young ruler, you know, he ran up and said, you know, what do I have to do to be happy? You know, what do I have to do to live forever, basically? And Jesus responded, you know, why do you call me good? And in that one little flip of a conversation, totally revealed the heart issue of that young man. And so something I think he has given a gift to me in is one, discernment, and two, articulation. So very often can perceive what's going on at the heart of a situation with somebody, and then also I'm able to articulate God's heart to that person. And that takes lots of different forms and shapes and roundabouts and swings and all those different things. But when I'm in a conversation and I know that the Spirit of God is moving in my heart and my mind, and I am seeing the effects in the person in front of me, I would say it's probably, you know, 1,000 times better than crack cocaine.
Do you have an example of or a story of when that happened recently?
Yeah, okay. So I was sitting with a student in a university in Dublin, and she has been through a lot in the past couple of years. And at the point that I met her at this on this day was nearly going to cancel on me and run away and just and not want to do it. And she sat and she was so angry, you know, and she was angry about a particular situation and something that somebody else had done and its effects on her. And I was able to sit and receive the anger in the conversation, and while she was talking and while she was venting, to in the quiet moments just ask God, okay, where do I go here? What is the key question? And what is the key thing that I need to see in this situation? Do I need to challenge her anger? Do I need to rebuff her anger? Do I need, you know, what do I need to do? And he just very clearly, you know, said, you need to acknowledge here. And when she was finished, I think she was expecting me to be like, stop being so petty or stop being this or whatever. But knowing what she'd been through up until this point, her anger was valid and good and honest. And I find anger kind of scary because I'm a pacifist most of my life and I prefer to keep the peace everywhere I go. But instead, I was able to go, good, I'm really glad that you're angry about this. And that changed the whole conversation. It was just that one direction from Jesus to say, acknowledge. And she walked away in a different, I saw it visibly change her. And that she would realize that, you know, there, I think validation and acknowledgement is such a huge part of that human need of being understood and seen. So that was kind of an example. He does that on a daily basis. Like, just that sort of direction with people.
And is it often just a tiny whisper?
Yeah.
Or how does it happen?
Yeah, it's recognizing his voice in the madness that goes on in my head and my heart. I'm a big advocate for this with believers and with young believers and with students and with staff and with everybody. Is, you know, Jesus said, my sheep know me and they hear my voice. And he modeled a life on this earth of communion with the Father that was not supposed to be unattainable or idealistic to us. It was a model that was accessible and opened up. And he spoke about his Father with the familiarity that you and I would speak about with someone that we see every day. and someone that we talk to every day. And that communion with God is as open to us as it was to Jesus. And I have had plenty of times, you know, where I will talk about hearing God and Christians will look at me like I have three heads and be like, and I sometimes have downplayed it because I don't want to. In Ireland, we have really very much so this culture where you don't think too much of yourself, like, and you don't say anything that makes you seem like you're a bit up yourself. That's not okay here. So I've downplayed it. But it's something that I worked at developing. It's a skill that I developed. It's not that I'm this super special human being with some sort of supernatural gift of hearing the voice of God. I mean, I am pretty special, let's be honest. But but it's like a skill that you develop. You know, the more that you get to know God, the more you hear him. And I would compare hearing his voice often, like if you're sitting in a busy pub in Dublin and they get pretty noisy, and somebody who I know, say my mother, walked in the door and she started talking, immediately my ear, above all the other noise, would go, oh, what is my mother doing in a pub? Because that is a rare occasion. And because I know her. Because I've grown up with her voice and I recognize it. There's something in my biology that recognizes her voice. And similarly, the more we get to know the Lord and the more we spend time with him. And I remember really fighting throughout my 20s and to really understand and engage and know the voice of God more and more.
And that's a good encouragement for all of us too. Like, yeah. Especially the last thing you mentioned, that's something you have to, even though Jesus talks about his sheep knowing his voice and understanding it, that's still a skill to develop and something to fight for. Mm-hmm. And then that in a way that pays off in those conversations.
Yeah. And it's a hard fight these days. There's a lot of voices coming at you all day long.
Yeah. You brought us some genuinely Irish examples there. Would you know it, you're the first Irish on this podcast.
The first Irish. I mean, that's a great...
Yes.
It's a great word, the first Irish. Woohoo! Hopefully not the last.
One question I've enjoyed asking people from other European countries or countries that are part of Agape Europe is, I genuinely believe that we can see traces of who God is in our different cultures and in different ways. So I would like to know from you, when you look at Irish culture, where do you see God in it?
For me, it starts in the history of Irish culture. We have a well-known heritage of deep spiritual commitment to the gospel. And you may have heard of a man called Saint Patrick, who came here all those years ago. But the Irish people have always been deeply tribal and have had a deep instinct towards spirituality. And when the gospel rampaged wonderfully through our culture thousands of years ago, it became something that multiplied through art, through music, and through a change the world attitude, which is what that generation, those generations in those times did. They instigated some of the first universities. In those universities, they multiplied and expressed the word of God through incredible art and music that still exists to this day. And then they took that to the world. And I still see that wonderful characteristic that I think is so God, of deep commitment to truth, the expression of it through music and art, and then the sending of that to the world through many different ways. Still in Irish culture, we are still doing that, and we have changed the world in numerous times through different mediums. I've heard someone say that God invented whiskey so that the Irish wouldn't rule the world.
That's an interesting way to put it. So when you say that's still happening, do you have more examples than whiskey?
Sure. Well, I think it's probably more in secular culture that I still see it happening. Irish people taking the global stage, both through the arts and through music, through other mediums of art as well. Also from a political stage, and even in science, there's many Irish scientists that are doing incredible things on a global stage. So the Irish have always had a world-changing attitude. They've never shied away from taking their place on a global stage and continue to do that.
Talking about taking a stage, this is your chance now, Chloe, to take this stage and share something with our listeners that you want them to take away from this interview, from your pearls of wisdom, maybe something to check out, something to think of, a question, anything you want.
Anything that I want, the power is mine. You have handed the scepter to me, and I can point it to anything that I want to point to. Where do I even start? There's so many things rushing through my brain right now. Okay, so if I was to take the stage of your listeners and I was to point them to one thing, there's always going to be, as Jesus said to Martha in the day where she was busily rushing around the kitchen, trying to take care of everybody, trying to provide for everybody, trying to do what everyone should do, and in her view, Mary should have been doing. And that treadmill of should, I think, is active in every single person's life, and we love to hop on it, and we love to go, well, I should be doing this, and we have these quite often unrealistic expectations of ourselves, and then we feel the unrealistic expectations of others, and then we interpret them in weird ways, and we can spend our days just on this crazy treadmill of what I should be doing. And Jesus spoke very powerfully into Martha's treadmill of should, that as human beings, we have this basic instinct to care for others and to be there for everybody. And I know, particularly as a woman, I'm very, very motivated by this will make everyone else's life better, which I think is interestingly how Eve was first tempted in the garden. If you do this, everyone's life will be better. And this sort of idea of self-sacrifice is the utmost for ourselves. And the more we sacrifice of ourselves, the better humans we are being. But Jesus advocated very strongly to Mary, as to Martha, as Mary was sitting at his feet. He turned to Martha and said, one thing is needful. And he also very clearly elsewhere said, love others as you love yourself, not love others instead of loving yourself. This has been a long process of learning this in my life, of how to have healthy boundaries, of how to recognize and attend to my own needs, and of how to keep the one thing as needful and give space to that one thing that is needful. And guess what? That's Jesus. Drop the mic.
Wow. Yes. The good last words.
The last words of Chloe Hannon. The last will and testament of Chloe Hannon.
Well, I mean, if the last word you're ever going to say is Jesus, I think you've done a good job.
Yeah. Well, I agree.
Thank you so much for sharing all of this with us.
And it was a delight and a pleasure.
Excellent. I want to say God bless you, and thank have a great day.
And you too. Enjoy Berlin.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
That was Chloe Hannon. She's Agape's National Campus Director in Ireland. If you have ideas for the perfect next guest or questions for this podcast, you can reach me at agape@agapeeurope.org. Other than that, you can also find Agape Europe on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or check out our website, agapeeurope.org. I'm Jochen Geck, and this is Humans of Agape. See you next time.